Live from the Bill's famous cheese spread studios in the downstairs pub, the Blockout Sports Pod is back on the air. From behind the master control desk in the aforementioned downstairs pub, I am your host and moderator for this evening. My name is Travis Carter. Over my right shoulder at the high top table, where he should be, it's very comforting now to look over my right shoulder and see the big fella, the tuna, Country Matt Kempf. And as I turn around, bellied up to the bar, the man who reminds us all that aloha means goodbye, the fabulous one, Freddie Benders.
When I think about somebody that just got back from Gulf Shores, aloha is exactly what I want to say to him.
Aloha, Mr. Hands.
You're liable to get thrown in jail down there for speaking some sort of foreign language.
That's a fact.
You say something like that.
Especially now they're letting Oklahoma people go down there. So I loved what you brought up last week. You were like, now that they're in the SEC, they feel comfortable coming to Gulf Shores, Alabama.
That's right.
So they didn't vacation. Where'd they make a Corpus Christi?
Yeah, easily somewhere out there.
South Padre.
Yeah.
Oh, South yeah, Padre. There you go. Or, you know, the Rio de Janeiro. wait a minute. The Rio Grande.
Yeah, yeah.
I did hit my head on the bottom of that bar. I don't think I'm still right.
We are, as I mentioned, finally back down in the downstairs pub studio tonight. I enjoyed it up there. For what it was, but it feels good to be able to stretch our legs a little bit, have sports on a couple of different TVs, and feels a little more natural.
I bet with Ike up there, it was a little tight.
It was about the same.
Three of us.
Ike's like, what are you talking about, Freddie?
I had him back in the corner where you were.
He just the hardest.
He's
place
a space eater.
Trying to find out where to put his beer.
You know right.
I mean? Yeah. I don't know where to put my beer.
He actually
shout out to Ike who was on the show last week talking about the NBA. He texted me that evening. He goes, "I left my beer on the floor in your studio. I didn't want you to kick it over. It's probably got another drink of it in it." So I went in there and took it. And that's one of the great things about Ike. Fred was talking about his son earlier going to a summer camp and how he has a tendency to leave things behind.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that Ike has ever come over here and done an episode without texting me and saying,
"I love my sunglasses."
Or something like that. And it was his sunglasses. Last episode, I left them in my mailbox.
Did he leave his jerky here?
No. This time it was simply his sunglasses, but... That's pretty funny, but it's good to have you guys back down here in the downstairs pub studio. As always, want to remind people we are on social media. Give us a follow on Twitter and Facebook. I guess to start the show tonight, we'll just jump right in. When we left last week, the Pacers and the Thunder were in the midst of a extremely competitive series. We were at that point hoping that the Pacers could find a way to win game four, which did not happen. And then last night in game five, as we had talked about, and I think some of the things that we talked about before this series started have really started to manifest themselves in this series. One, that the Pacers probably, game one notwithstanding, that if the Pacers found themselves in a hole early in the ball game, it would be difficult to come back on this team. And secondarily, we said that if Tyrese Halliburton had some of his disappearing acts, as he has had throughout this postseason, really going back to last year, with, you know, play a great game, kind of disappear, great game, disappear, that it would be a very difficult thing for Indiana to overcome. And I think that's kind of where we're at now with Oklahoma City up 3-2, coming back to Indianapolis for game six Thursday night, which should be a fantastic atmosphere in Indianapolis. But now we await the medical update as Halliburton has been shown, and I think it was relatively apparent last evening. I mean, he comes out of the locker room with a giant ice pack on his leg. That's a pretty good sign that something might be wrong. News came out this afternoon that he has been diagnosed with a strained calf and is undergoing an MRI to assess the severity of the injury. Anytime you're talking about a calf issue, the obvious next question or next step, and the doctors will have to look at it, is how much does that raise the risk factor of having a severe Achilles injury? Because a lot of people, say it's just a medical fact that a strained calf a lot of times leads to these devastating Achilles injuries. And then the Pacers kind of will have to navigate, not just from a franchise standpoint, do we play Halliburton with the thought that at any time something could happen where it could cause him to miss the entire next year, but you also kind of have to navigate your franchise player, your star player, having to tell him, hey, look, man, I know this could be our season, this next game, but we just can't risk it. Like, that's a real thing. That's going to be, I hope it doesn't come to that, but it seems like we might be traveling down that road.
I'd sit there and I'd say, okay, if you want to play, I need you to sign a piece of paper saying that you will not get paid any money next year if you're out next season with an injury.
Right.
If he's willing to sign that, then you know what? Maybe we'll talk about you playing.
Yeah, it would just, you know, and we had talked about it before the show that I can't imagine any more of a depressing way to end what has been one of the great Pacers seasons of my lifetime than to have your star player go down and potentially be told, yeah, he's not playing next year either. And kind of now you're just dreading next year, where, quite frankly, everybody gets through this healthily. And the Pacers maybe make a move or two here or there. They're clearly going to be one of the favorites to win the East next year. And
especially with Boston's going to have Tatum out.
Yeah, right.
Next year.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. And so, you know, there's really a lot of layers to this kind of to peel back. Tuna, I don't know how, because I know you've been involved in watching college baseball and the NHL and everything like that, but I didn't know, and I think you said last night that you were flipping back and forth. I don't know how much of this series you have been watching, but kind of just your general, as somebody maybe doesn't follow it as closely as clearly and don't have the emotional thoughts that I do about it, and maybe not watching as close as even Fred, kind of your perceptions and your observations of these two teams as they've gotten through five games.
I've watched every game this series except for this last one. It was Ohtani pitched his first inning right back. So
that's
attention was on that last night. So I didn't get to see. I did watch the fourth quarter. I'd say just from the outside looking in, like Indiana, like we talk about, you never count them out. It's always a different guy. It's, you know, they've got some killers on that team. Siakam and Halliburton's been great, obviously, but it seems like there's another guy each night, whether it's like Nesmith or what's the other guy that has a name similar to Nesmith?
Nembhard.
Yeah. Or they've all had their big games throughout these playoffs.
TJ McConnell. In game three was and that was something I wanted to talk about last night, and we discussed this again before we went on air. McConnell was the guy that brought them back from 16, 18 down, whatever it was, and got it basically to, they got it to a 2-point game, and McConnell was a huge part of that. And then Carlisle took him out of the game, and I don't believe that he ever went back in. Maybe way at the end.
Mm-hmm.
By that point, I'd already turned the game off. But
yeah, you watch that first series that the Thunder played in against the Grizzlies, and they just looked like this unbelievable team. And it's, you know, I know the Grizzlies were having their issues with a new coach and everything after firing, but it was watching the Thunder, even, you know, really in every series they've been in, minus the Denver series. Denver punched them in the mouth a little bit, and watching how they reacted to Denver was big to watch. But I think Indiana's been able to really punch them in their face, and they come out and are kind of giving Indiana a taste of their own medicine here late. That's kind of what I'm seeing here, is watching Oklahoma City adjust and watching Indiana adjust. It's one of those things where I always talked about. I never gave coaching in NBA enough credit. I was like, what are they really doing? They got a short shot clock. You know, you got these superstars that are just looking to take a shot and get one pass, and then that's it. And no, it's a lot more to that. And watching these two coaches play chess with each other has actually been kind of neat to watch.
Yeah, so. And I thought, and I said this earlier, that I thought, and I've been, and I'm not at all questioning Rick Carlisle, because I think he's one of the finest coaches in all basketball. But I did think last night was the first time in this playoffs that he kind of lost the pulse of his team to a certain extent. And he's been so masterful at finding the right guys that are hot and getting them in the ball game at the right time. And I thought last night, and I think he would probably tell you after watching the film, because it's hard when you're in the midst of it in the game. Like, you're coaching obviously at that level by analytics and with your assistants and everything, but ultimately it's your call. And sometimes you get caught up in the game. I think having watched it on film, he would probably tell you, yeah, I wish I would have done a couple of things different last night. But, you know, honestly, I felt like, I had predicted Pacers in six, and boy, we were really looking like that could be a thing on whatever night that was.
Was that Friday night?
Friday night.
Yeah.
3 minutes and a half. I think it was like 3.5 minutes to go. The Pacers were not down. I mean, they were in control pretty much the entire ball game, and I allowed myself to get comfortable with it. And the next thing, that's been Indiana all playoffs, and that was Oklahoma City in game four. They did not quit. They did not give up. They made a couple plays down the stretch. I know some people were belly aching about the officiating, and it was not a particularly consistently called game, and I don't think last night was either, but I wouldn't necessarily say that the officiating was like a deciding factor in the game. I mean, I just feel like Oklahoma City has outplayed Indiana for the majority of this series, and I hope like hell that Indiana can figure out a way. Hopefully Halliburton can play, and they can get this thing to a seventh game, which is where you
can.
And
I give
Fred,
you all the Clip Notes version with my opinion?
Yes.
I'm going to tell you right now, the Thunder, the role players are playing better than Indiana's role players.
Yeah.
They're scoring more.
You're right.
They're doing more. The Indiana players that were overachieving are not overachieving right now. I know Mathern had a big game, but then he can't hit free throws and he has a down game. And SGA, and you have a hurt Halliburton right now that's gimpy, and you have SGA and Jalen Williams that are both pretty much unstoppable, and it ain't looking good.
And that's
it
thing.
Ain't looking good for the
that's
Pacers
the thing, Fred,
right now.
Is you know every single night essentially what you're going to get from SGA.
Yeah.
Like, there's
and now
no...
Jalen Williams is scoring 40, 30. When you got those two guys and you have a Halliburton that's getting four, that starts off bad anyways, and now he's hurt, it just doesn't look good to me right now.
No, it doesn't. Somehow they got to figure out a way to get game six. And then, you know, you kind of think in game seven, it's one game. You know, maybe they shoot 60%.
If they can get to game seven, as we talked about when Tune and I picked them in seven, anything can happen, yes. Sure. Even if it's even in Oklahoma City, but you got to have Halliburton healthy order for that to happen.
There's no doubt. And I could even conceivably see a way that Indiana like rides this emotional high from the crowd, and they get hot early, and it's never really close, even with Halliburton not playing in game six. I could totally see that happening. But you're not going to win game seven without Tyrese Halliburton.
No.
So...
I feel like last night, Nembhard, who has been that guy that does his shake and bake and shoots a three, and he feeds off Halliburton and Nesmith a little bit, that he was even passing up shooting that three.
And
like, they really needed a 1-3 from him in the fourth quarter, and he passed it up, and he played terrible. He had a lot of turnovers at the end, silly things that he doesn't normally do.
The biggest thing to me about his game last night was he's been so good defensively. And I know people are going to say, well, how can you say that when SGA has had 35?
Oh, my God, his hand's been in his face, and he still hits shots.
But it has been like the games that Indiana has won, even though SGA has scored a lot of points, it's been a not very efficient lot of points, and it's been a frustrated lot of points. And last night and late in game four, I felt like there was not the what's the word I'm looking for? Not the resistance that we had seen earlier in the series. But, you know, I mean,
next two games are going to be, I mean, hey, this has been a fun series. Have y'all enjoyed it? I've enjoyed the hell out of it.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's been, and I'm not saying that all series aren't fun, but it's been a refreshing finals for sure.
It has.
With new teams.
Just to see some new guys in there.
And
new fan bases and new cities being represented. Like,
well, how many times we talk about it, like, really, the fourth quarter is when chaos can happen. You can be up 12, 13, 14, 15 points going into the fourth, and then, I mean, you're not going to get that in a lot of other sports.
No. It just seems like the Thunder are the ones making the big runs right now. We've got to change that.
They
somehow
certainly have in the last two ball games, and we'll see.
I like to see SGA get foul trouble somehow.
Yeah.
OKC is a 5-point favorite on this next game. And the Nerds have the predicted score as OKC 119, Indiana 108. So
if they say he's fully healthy, and that's obviously a big if, I just feel like I've seen enough of these playoff series in my life to think that the Pacers are going to play super loose. And it would honestly not surprise me if they blew them out.
The Pacers blew them out?
Yes.
Here's the thing. This is the only way I would question that. The only time we've seen OKC with their backs up against the wall was game seven against the Nuggets. And what happened in that game? They went out and put up, 140-something and, won by, close to 50 points in that game.
But see, I don't think this is a backs against the wall scenario for them. They're in the position of, hey, man, no matter what, we can come home on Sunday and close this thing out. Like,
aren't they going to be in, okay.
Yeah.
So this one's in Indiana.
This one's in Indiana.
I'm clearly not predicting
the fans
anything,
will definitely
but,
be giving them some great
but,
momentum.
But I will say that now the health of Halliburton is of paramount importance, obviously. If he's unable to play, then all bets are off. But, it'll be interesting to see. The Pacers have earned the right to at least not give up on them at this point. It's going to be very,
very difficult.
I ain't giving
up on them, my God. Let's go.
Now, here's the thing. The Pacers just lost back-to-back games for the first time in like 2.5 months last night. So, I don't know when the last time they lost 3 in a row was, but by the same token, Oklahoma City has not lost back-to-back games in... It was longer than that, I think. And so that's going to be a very difficult scenario. But I would love to see them get the opportunity to do that. And
those games are? When is game seven? When would game seven be?
Tomorrow night
is
Thursday.
Thursday. And then game, it would
seven
be
is Sunday.
Sunday. Oh, it would be Sunday. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Two
I thought it might be Saturday.
I believe that's right. I
know the
that.
NBA's been doing a lot of final, like important
I
games
will check
on
that.
Sunday.
Because that it very well could be
Saturday night,
could be
baby.
Saturday night.
But the NBA is that they normally push to Sunday a lot.
Yes, it would be Sunday at 8 o'clock if necessary. And then the game is as they have been the weekday games is at 8:30 on Thursday night. But we'll see if Indiana can force a all or nothing game seven, and I for one hope that they can. Moving on to another big event that we had in sports this past weekend was the U.S. Open. Now, we had previewed it on last week's show, and Freddie and I are in a Calcutta-type deal where you draft a couple of golfers, you put in some money, and you see... You know, if one of your two golfers can win. With our first pick, we took somebody that Fred and I had both felt pretty good about leading into the tournament, and that was Shane Lowry. And he went out and not only shot himself out of the tournament on day one, on day two, he told the course to go F itself about five times.
Slammed a camera on the ground. Yeah. He was having a day.
But then with our second pick, we took Sam Burns. And boy, that pick looked unbelievable until...
Shammy.
Until it started raining on Sunday afternoon. And then all hell broke loose. Now, Fred?
Dang it. What a great pick, Travis.
Well, I'll tell you the story off the air as to how I made that pick. It certainly wasn't my tremendous golf acumen.
Okay.
It was a complete shot in the dark. But I want to get your thoughts, Fred, because you had sent a text like, I don't know, through 6 or 7 holes on Sunday saying this golf tournament is boring. Nothing's happened. I don't like the course. At what point...
Reminds me of Neville Mead. No, I'm kidding.
At what point after that did you realize that's one of the worst takes of all time?
It was a bad take, but I was... it seemed like every time I watched it or listened to it on the radio that like Thursday and Friday and even... And I watched some of it Friday, but I listened to it on the radio coming home when my family was asleep on I-65 coming back.
Probably because golf is on the radio.
And, well, no, golf can be fun on ESPN, on those guys. Travis and I listen to them a lot.
I listen to them constantly.
But it just seemed like nothing was happening, and then there would be stops and rain, and it wasn't necessarily a sexy leaderboard, But that's what is cool, and U.S. Open's not one of my favorite tournaments, but it is funny that some of these mammoths could not are shooting in the 80s and stuff and couldn't make the cut. That happens, and you know what, Travis, you're right. It was a much better tournament, and by God, on Sunday it really got. I mean, you had even though the golfers were going the wrong direction. They were making it close. You know what I'm saying? They were like, someone else took the lead. Someone else took the lead. But it was going to plus three to plus, or from plus one to plus two to plus three. But it still was exciting. Don't get me wrong. And the cool thing about it was, is it was giving young players that haven't really had their chance to have their chance.
Right.
And that's what, looking back, that's what really became the true story of Sunday. And then I look back, and I always recap live at the U.S. Open or live at the Masters or whatever, and I always get a way better feeling about the tournament once I watch the recap and the interviews and everything. And I didn't give J.J. Spahn a chance. You know, he had that dumbfounded look on his face half the time he was playing.
Well, that first nine but just completely sank him, man.
Yeah. It did, but I really love this guy now, and I'm so glad that Travis gave me shit on Sunday because I did find out so much more about him and some of these other almost went pro in skateboarding. And
he's almost quit golf like five
almost
times.
Quit golf. He so does not believe in himself at all. Like, even you're listening, Kisner's like, yeah, I was in the locker room one tournament. I played a lot of golf with him, and I had to pull him aside and go, dude, you're pretty good. Like even Kisner's telling that he had to give him a pep talk midway through the year. So it was really cool. And yes, I did love all the players and all the opportunities they have, and you find out all these new people that are involved on their team that helps them that you don't normally see. You know, you're used to the big name guys, and it really makes it a small time story. You know what I'm saying? And it is.
Yeah, it wasn't
cool.
A big gambler's day, so you kind of had the
right.
The bettors were kind of out of it. I'd say Victor Hovland was probably the only one that people had money on.
Yeah.
And into that day, I bet there was a lot of money going down on Victor Hovland.
And he hadn't played well all year, and to see him coming back.
Yeah,
you know,
he picked it up a little bit before major.
His swing is and everything is not fully back to what he's tried to change. And even what about Scheffler? At one point, you thought Scheffler had a chance to take the lead in this thing.
I think the announcers were hyping that up a little bit more. He was still behind by like four strokes. You know what I mean? And like
they were,
but he could get an eagle at some point.
I think they were trying
that.
To keep viewership going.
They were definitely in the let's make sure everybody knows that he's not out of the tournament yet. Like, that was kind of the mantra there for, like, six holes in a row. Now, quite frankly, when Adam Scott and Sam Burns started coming backwards, Scheffler did have two putts that he could have been one out of the lead if he makes those two putts. Yeah. And they were both makeable putts. Now, come to find out, he wouldn't have ended up being in the mix. But at that time, I really thought that plus one might win the tournament.
I just kept saying, get Scheffler off the course.
And, I mean,
plus one finished third
place. But, you know, like Adam Scott, I've always liked Adam Scott. I think he's one of the great, the best, one of the true gentleman golfers
you don't like
in
his putter.
Golf. But I can't stand long putters, so sorry, I wasn't pulling for him. Even though I do respect the hell out of that guy. He will be a Ryder Cup, or I guess he can't be, can he?
He's Australian, right?
Right, he's Australian, but he would be a great captain of men, I think. Of
Australia and South Africa should do their own version of the Ryder Cup. Well, like those two versions.
They do the President's Cup.
Yeah,
President's Cup. But I do really respect Adam Scott. I mean, dude, he's at the Masters dinners. Like, he's got a green jacket.
Yeah.
So I do respect him, and I do think he's one of the nicest guys on tour. And it was cool that who was the guy waiting for J.J. Spahn. Adam Scott went into the room and congratulated him, and he didn't have to. He was coming off the course and had lost, and I thought it was great sportsmanship. And I know that on the Golf Channel, this is what they're talking about now. The sportsmanship is really being pushed because a lot of these golfers are throwing rants more than they ever have. They're cussing. They're not doing interviews. And a lot of the – now, I'm not just talking about Chamblee and them, but even – I'm hearing it everywhere that a lot of people aren't happy about it. Some of the past golfers aren't happy about it because they had to do that kind of stuff.
Did you see and apparently Wyndham Clark took a club to the locker room? Have you seen those – those pictures that
no, I didn't hear anything about him.
There was a former golfer, and it's somebody very famous, and I can't remember who it was on Twitter, who said, I saw somebody do something like this the last time the U.S. Open was at Oakmont. Now I've seen it twice, and he didn't say who it was, and the lockers are all bent up and smushed in. And apparently, it turns out it was Wyndham Clark.
That came guy's kind of crazy.
Came off the course and had a moment.
Yeah, that dude.
In the locker
I think
room.
That dude's got a hothead. He's no. kind of a hothead, dude.
We've seen him out there at the yeah, warm up yeah. or at the practice rounds last year in Valhalla. He was like, wasn't everybody like coming up to him? Like he was the guy on the
yeah,
course. Like
yeah.
every golfer was making their way over to talk to him.
Right,
so, I mean,
right. And I thought, you know who I kind of like? I think he's a smooth individual and kind of cocky, but everybody loves him in the crowd. Ben Griffin.
Yeah.
He's got those shades on and he's smile. He's just, I like him. I've kind of picked up a liking for him too. He's going to be around on Sundays, in the future. But anyways, you know, I agree. And on top of that too, that not only are they getting on these golfers for throwing tantrums and not doing interviews and da da, it was cool to see, and they did pump it up, but it's cool to see the guys that handled their business a different way and were all involved and were all in the leaderboard, you know. I mean, Sam Burns, good God. I mean, you saw what happened to him. He could have taken that totally differently and been, you know what
well,
I'm saying? The calling
he,
on him.
I thought he had every right to be upset.
Yeah.
With not getting relief. Because I saw Scottie Scheffler get relief from an area that I thought was five times better than
when that rolled in the right corner. Yeah.
I mean, his ball was floating.
It was floating, and even Kisner them goes, oh, that ball's in the water right there. I mean, they all called it, and then they went away to some other golfers. They come back, and he goes, oh, he's going to try to get relief, and then he didn't get it. I think that everyone was kind of shocked.
Kisner said at least twice on the broadcast that he thought that was a rotten ruling.
Yeah.
But
and
I
he
mean,
asked two different guys.
Yeah.
He got a second opinion.
And they both told him no.
Yeah, which normally
I don't know the
happen.
Rules well enough to know why. I mean, clearly they had their reasons, but it just seemed like from watching it, common sense would be
right.
if you hit the ball in the fairway and your ball is floating in the grass,
yeah.
that you might be able to move it. But
I have never seen a course hold water like that before.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just insane.
It was insane.
You know, and I wonder if a lot of it isn't that it's like, you know, I mean, it is one of the old school traditional American golf courses, right? Mm-hmm. I wonder if they don't have all the stuff that like Augusta has, that sucks the water out of the course and the aerates
the
greens
from
underneath.
You know what? I bet you're right. I bet you're right. Yeah,
because,
that's
I mean,
a good point.
It could rain like that for 2 weeks at Augusta and give them about 12 hours and that thing's going to be dry as a bone.
Right,
You know what I mean? Because I thought the same thing. It rained for like 25 minutes and there's standing water on all the greens.
Yeah, it was strange. At Duna, but guess what we got to look forward to, guys?
The Open.
A good breakfast and brunch at the Open.
Yeah.
Coming up, baby.
Can't wait. Cannot wait.
And I hope it. And where is it? Where's it going to be? I want to know right now, tonight, if I can get up and have like scrambled eggs and a mimosa. And
gotta have some jowl bacon and
yeah,
some baked beans.
Some jowl bacon.
and some baked beans.
Blood sausage.
Yeah.
Blood, yeah. I want it to be open. I want it to be, you know, you wake up at 6 in the morning. I mean, there's been times when it has been at a,
Port Rush?
Some of the weirdest.
Royal Port
oh,
Rush?
Oh, yeah. It's in Northern Ireland.
Okay.
Shane Lowry's and Rory's.
Rory.
Area there. So that will be cool. And, yeah.
And you know what? No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It'll be like the
right,
early
it'll
morning.
Be
get
early
up at
morning.
6 in the morning.
And the thing
type
with
deal.
Rory, you know, and I know Tuna has his feelings of Rory and Travis has his. But you know what? I know Rory is one of the most, I mean, he is a genuine interview. He does tell you what's on his mind, where I kind of feel like everybody does. but. I do feel, and I feel like Tiger and Phil didn't always tell you what was on their mind.
Tiger never said anything.
No, right.
In
we didn't
25
see Tiger's
years.
Personality.
No, not at
late,
all.
Late,
but
late.
But Rory does give you that. But you know what I would say to everyone if I was Rory? I won the Masters, and I want to freaking chill out and do nothing. So everyone get away from me.
Well, I think he kind of said that, didn't he?
I mean, I guess
he was
he
like,
did.
He said it's kind of hard to find motivation now.
Right, but see, they grind that out and pick it apart and everything. And I'm like, why don't you just cut to the chase and tell them to F off? You know what I mean? Like, dude, I won the Masters. It was my one thing that I wanted to get. I've gotten it this year, and I'm just going to chill till we're in Port Rush or something. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to always be, he doesn't always have to be dissected so much.
I think when you're a fan of professional athletes, like say it's your sports team or whatever, like you don't want to hear, and I know there's a lot of kids look up to Rory and these golfers.
I know, you're
you
right.
Don't want to get out there and say, well, I'm not motivated. I'm going to go out here and go
yeah,
through the motions.
I know.
It's
I
like,
know.
Why even play if you're I not going to, you know what I'm saying?
And you know, I'm usually on the other fence on that, but yeah. I'm with you.
Well,
I hear you.
Rory clearly is, and I know that that course, Oakmont, did this to a lot of golfers, but I saw Rory chuck a club up the fairway.
Caught it.
And I saw Rory smash the tee marker on the tee box, which, you know, you can say a lot of things about Rory, but I would never have considered him as an on-the-course super hothead.
I think we've seen that from a lot of golfers this weekend.
Yeah.
Normally oh, don't
no,
do that.
No, you're right.
Shane Lowry
we
for
did.
One.
Yeah. Like, now, Tyrrell Hatton, you would expect to see that from
well, that's
Tyrrell
the text
Hatton.
I sent you
guys. He don't apologize
like,
for it, though.
I said, Shane Lowry's doing what I expected Tyrrell Hatton to do, and Tyrrell Hatton's doing what I expected
that,
Shane
that
Lowry
was
to
hilarious.
Do.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
But you know what, Tyrrell Hatton, don't apologize for that. And I respect him for that. He is
you
who he is.
You know you're getting with him.
Yeah.
Well, there is no question about that.
You don't see a lot of kids walking around pulling for Tyrrell Hatton either. I don't think it matters to him.
I don't
but
think
like,
he cares.
You know, if you accept that role and you're fine with it, go for it.
Right,
but you're not going
right.
to get any love from the media ever.
You know, and one thing that I did, and Fred, I don't mean to pile on. This is not a pile on thing. But you said you didn't really like the course, and I get why that might be the case. But I'm going to give you my...
I just wanted more trees.
Well, and...
Big tree guy.
You know, they cut down, like,
I
literally
know.
Something like 3,000 trees.
Well, I was watching
trees.
That Tiger replay when it rained, and I was like, dude.
But they did it for a couple of reasons, because I was the
they
same way.
Our environment.
Number one, it made the... It made the course much more difficult to maintain.
No,
and number
true.
Two, for the first 60 years of its existence, there were no trees on that course. They planted all those at when it was in
it
vogue
was, right.
for American golf to have all these tree-lined fairways and everything. So it was kind of a kill two birds with one
I
stone gotcha. Thing.
I gotcha.
To turn it back the way it used to be and to make it easier to maintain.
Right.
Like
maybe a little foliage would have prevented all that rain from standing up.
Maybe. I don't know. But I love kind of the wide open. It looks from the air, it would appear to be almost like a
Link
style course.
Style course.
Only it's the opposite of a link style.
Right,
course.
Right, right. The bunkers are,
and I love the way that they, that the, I mean, the USGA.
Oh, they're crazy.
Like, I don't know if you guys saw this on one of the live from the US Open things or whatever, but they had like 150 guys out there with rakes, fluff, like raking the rough to make it stand, up and make it that way. And one of the cool things to me, and why I thought like that tournament is not over until the last guy shoots his last shot, is because you can literally hit a ball 6 yards off the fairway and it gets in a bad spot and you can make triple bogey.
Right. No, I'm
like, it can happen that quick. Plus all the history that's there, and you
there
can go
back.
There
is a lot of history, and hell, I enjoyed watching the Tiger replay. That was pretty cool.
Let me ask you this.
That was pretty cool. I hadn't seen that in a long time, and I know you probably have.
I hadn't, and I paused it right when it came on, and they were showing.
Did you see it,
Tuna? No, were you watching I was watching it? College World Series.
That's right.
They like, I'm not going to watch a rain delay replay.
I didn't watch.
I couldn't keep my eyes off.
I didn't watch more than 2 minutes of it because
I like Tiger's baggy pants.
I knew how it ended, and I hated that. Because I wanted Rocco Media to win that tournament.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But,
I remember it.
Tuna,
well,
it's funny you mentioned that because I paused it right when they turned, right when they came on the air. And Tiger is like, has hit it off into the rough. So there's all these fans real close to him, right around him. He's wearing these like parachute pant looking pants. His shirt is about 2.5 sizes too big. And then all the fans, every single one of the guys, is wearing cargo shorts like almost
to their ankles.
Yes. You saw it too.
It looked like the Arkansas Razorback.
You saw it too.
When they would wear them, everyone was wearing shorts.
Because
huge.
I thought,
going to Bass Pro Shop now.
Yeah. I thought,
where you going with all that cargo, Bubba?
I thought, my God. Is that how we all dressed?
We
back
did.
Then? I mean,
we
I guess
literally
we did.
Wore them to our shins. Like, even if you played basketball, how those players, like the Fab Five, got the ball between their legs when they're dribbling.
I will say, I've always been a shorts above the knee guy.
Yeah.
I've got short legs anyway for somebody my height.
Yeah,
so, like, I would get shorts and I would have my mom hem them up.
Oh, there you go.
They'd be down there. So
were
your
jorts hemmed up there too?
I mean, as an adult male, like after jorts.
Let me tell you this, Fred. If you go back and watch like a Fab Five game today compared to what college players were wearing in 2008, 2009, they might as well have been wearing John Stockton nut huggers. They were so much like pretty much what the Fab Five wore is just barely
barely above the knee.
It's
barely Jordan too.
Barely bigger than what they wear today.
But when I like to the Arkansas Razorback team of like Corliss Williamson and Scotty Thurman and that little Kareem Reed, they literally look like
out your boy here, St. Bonaventure. With those shorts he was wearing.
Look, show Travis.
Yes, dude, there was a big fat guy that played for Kelvin Sampson at IU named DeAndre Thomas.
Okay.
And he looked like he was wearing his pajamas. It was like that, but he was a big fat guy, and there was no room between the top of his sneakers and the bottom of his shorts.
And how do you, I mean, it
had
to
Louisville
be difficult to go between the legs.
When he played here.
To do your dribbling moves and stuff had to be more difficult. It just had to.
But anyway.
Yeah, you can't go between your legs like that.
No.
I don't know.
No,
like
and
how.
Clothing
no.
hanging down.
No. It was a fantastic Sunday of golf. Sunday was just a great sports day. It was a great sports weekend, but I want to go back real quick to Saturday night, where
it's all right for fighting.
One of the monumental sports moments of my life occurred on Saturday night, and I was so glad that I got to watch it with Colin. because my DC Defenders.
Oh, God. This really hurts.
Basically are the new home tenants of the St. Louis, whatever the Enormo Dome is called there.
Gosh dang it.
They come in there and absolutely lay the wood to Collins, Michigan Panthers.
Oh, buddy, did they ever.
And
Bo Schembechler rolled in his grave.
I just wanted to really say that it feels great to be a world champion. I'm on top of the world.
Where's your ring? Oh, wait, where's your aluminum trophy?
Hold on, now, I want to touch on this. Really, the DC Defenders won the world championship last week. Getting through the XFL version of the UFL, that's the real men's league.
Right.
That is what the SEC believes they are to college football, is what the XFL is to the UFL.
Yes. Right.
The USFL is like, I don't know what they are. They're the Conference USA. They're just over there. So really, Travis, you should have celebrated last week. I almost felt bad for Michigan that they had to play an XFL team, you know, to go on.
I know.
So,
but guys, I got to tell you, I heard a couple interviews. I'm not going to, I won't even get into where I heard, but the UFL is here to stay.
I don't think it's going anywhere.
I don't think it's going anywhere. And I'm telling you, I heard that there is expansion on the cusp.
Are we going to get the Sea Dragons back?
Well, that's true.
Or
maybe
the Arizona Raptors?
I don't know who they could be.
They cut half the league out.
They did, but I
think
they're working
on it. Move them to Louisville, damn it.
Dude, if they put it in Louisville, I don't know, man. I would go probably, but like, I don't know how many people would.
They
could play
high down there. Because doesn't DC plays their home games in the soccer stadium, right?
Yeah.
They could move it. They could play them right down there at whatever that place is, the new
Louisville
soccer.
FC.
Lynn Family Stadium.
Yeah.
Play them at Cardinal Stadium, man. Get them out there. I'm all for that.
Yeah. Well,
they could probably play them over here at
St. X.
Manual or whatever.
Yeah. Like, we got Uber a tune or the beer snake got him.
Can you imagine, Fred, if we could just walk from your backyard to the stadium
in
your neighborhood,
dude.
And that's where the Louisville Sea Dragons were playing?
Yeah, they're redoing Manual Stadium right
now.
They
got to call us the River Monsters. Yeah.
But no, you're right. You make a good point that, well, where are the Sea Dragons if you're talking about expansion? I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but I do believe that I'm telling you right now that, if not in college first, that they are going to take some of these replay refereeing tactics that they are using.
They absolutely
have to do that. Can you imagine how that brings the fan in to actually, you know, it also Luganville was talking about this, where it takes pressure off the referees. You actually feel and understand where they're coming. Because when you hear them discussing a call and where they finally come to at the end, it's a pretty cool thing.
The NFL will never allow that.
The NFL will not allow that, but college could.
Now, and Fred, you bring up a great point. I was actually telling my dad and Colin that, and I'm sure that you guys know because I'm sure you guys watch the 30 for 30 about the original XFL. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All the stuff from the XFL that television and rules brought in to the NFL, including the camera that flies down.
The cable.
They get behind the quarterback there.
Yeah. And
they needed to bring the kickoff rule back. Remember they were just, didn't they just like, they would throw the ball out and everybody just ran for it.
Yeah,
you got it.
They would have two guys basically do like a giant Oklahoma drill.
Yeah.
They threw the ball in the middle of the field, started two guys like 20 yards away. They ran full speed at each other, dove on the ball.
Oh my God.
Imagine you got like Tyreek Hill and Jamar Chase going at it.
Dude, insane. God.
Yeah. But
I do think that
I totally
is
agree with that, Fred.
I'm
glad you brought that up because that's something that I was thinking about, too. There's a few different things that will probably end up in the
right.
major American football, if not the NFL, at least college.
At least college.
Doesn't the NFL kind of help fund this a little bit?
It does.
Okay. I was going to say, some of their – they are pumping yeah. money into it.
And there are players that – there's been several players on rosters.
Jordan yeah. Te'amu was a Chief for a year.
Yeah.
And I think he's been to a couple places. But you know, yeah. with college football and all these transfers and guys playing in the – you know, in college for 6, 7, 8 years.
Right.
Who knows? They could
– Well, think about how it's all changed. I mean, mm-hmm. high school – if you're not – a super 20 badass player, the Leonard Fournette or who, you know what I'm talking about? If you're not one of those guys, you're in trouble.
You know what's funny?
If you're just like some defensive, some yeah. safety out there that is a great top 100.
I did this the other day. I went down this, like, I read an article and it had me going down the rabbit hole of like, top 10 players coming out of high school, like where they were ranked or how they ended their career and what they, you'd be surprised by the amount of guys that you'd never heard of.
Right.
Top 10 prospects. It's pretty
and
wild.
And obviously like, this is what Luke and Bill was talking about too. And I mean, we've talked about it. I mean, why go after a recruiting kid who's going to hold 5 different hats up? You don't know if he's going to go to you when you can go grab some kid that's played 25 games already mm-hmm. that is, you know what I'm saying, that is more mature. It's just the landscape, and we are going to actually get into that next week.
Yeah,
of not just the yes. landscape of college football, but the landscape of, Tuna, how do you want to word that, of college sports, period.
College athletics.
How it is getting ready to change dramatically, if it as it already has.
A lot of club sports.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that we got that out of the way, because I know Colin wanted to hear my recap of the UFL championship. Colin, maybe next year. Maybe next year.
And that little old trophy's in a little coffee cup, coffee can, until next year.
Now, Tuna said
have they
that
made the trophy
Tuna
better?
Said they've made the trophy better.
Okay,
I think they listened to some social media. Well, since Cisna's right up here on the corner, went out of business. That's probably where they made the last. You know,
I think I saw a guy doing the engraving right there at the end of the game.
Yeah, the Renegades got the inaugural one, and that was bad. I think there was a lot of issues after that.
All I can say is St. Louis won the second year of attendance record.
Cool, man.
Two years in a row.
Way to go, St. Louis.
Ka-ka!
I think Tennessee keeps doing that in college football. It's not turning into championships.
No.
How you do one of them bad ones? Like a car, car, car.
So, Tuna, you have to be relatively excited this evening, because right before we got on the air, Louisville won an elimination game at the College World Series, beating Oregon State in what can only be described. Both those games,
cardiac cards
between those two teams, were just, you know, every batter at the end was like pulling teeth, and big plays made, big mental mistakes, and basically, just wanted to open the floor to you to talk about the College World Series, not just U of L, but what you've seen as the tournament has gone on and what you are looking forward to as we move ahead.
Yeah, you talk about every bat, every play, the mental mistakes in the field. That's kind of what makes college ball different than if you only really predominantly watch Major League Baseball. You're not going to see the chaos that you see. I mean, you see great plays happen.
Right.
But the consistency, when it happens, it's a phenomenal thing. To watch today, this game, and two major errors by both teams down the stretch. Mm. And it just insane points in time. I think all in all, this College World Series has been one of my favorites. What the kid from Arkansas did yesterday.
No hitter.
throwing a no-hitter. I mean, he was hitting 99 over 100 pitches in.
How many did he strike out? 17?
19?
19. Jesus.
Yeah, 19, which is, you know, you don't see that.
No.
In, you know,
no.
At that level. And what he was doing, I don't know, man. It's just one big thing after another. Arkansas is up right now. They're in an elimination game with UCLA. Oh, another error. It's a throwing error right there.
right on
oh,
cue.
Oh, they got the
oh,
runner
got him.
Out.
He didn't. He
overran first too far.
Oh,
no.
What an idiot. but yeah, man, it's nice having the Cards in this situation. I think this may be the deepest that we've gone in College
so.
World Series.
I
so
think
it's nice. I mean, two elimination games in a row. We're going to do it again tomorrow. By the time that this airs, the game will probably be either getting ready to start or over with.
So you're officially in the Final Four.
No, we're in the Final Five. We'll be in the Final Four tonight.
You
got to
beat Coastal Carolina twice.
We got to beat Coastal twice, and then the winner of this game, the Arkansas-UCLA game, will have to beat LSU twice.
Okay, isn't that ironic how we talked about Coastal Carolina, and here we are.
Dude, they are a white-hot team right now. What have they won, 25, 26 straight right now?
Yeah.
They pretty much do it all. That's a scary team. And they brought a lot of fans out here. The Myrtle Beach boys have traveled out here to Omaha.
Yes.
So, but it's I've enjoyed the hell out of this from top to bottom. I think there's only been, three teams that have lost their game ones and then went on to win the College World Series.
Right.
So that really puts you in a situation when you got to beat one of these top teams, you know, 2 days in a row.
The LSU boys are tough.
Yeah, Arkansas is going to have – or I'm saying Arkansas if they get past UCLA tonight. But that would be a fun matchup again.
LSU seems like the team that's been in the – Johnny and Josh's boys seem like that they're the team that's been the driver's seat, if you will. Do you agree with that?
They are. It's just – I've watched LSU over the years, and LSU's had some of, like, these great personality guys come through there. Like,
right.
You start falling in love with some of the players.
Right.
I don't know if there's a guy on this team that I just really like.
Right.
You know, it's not like I dislike these guys, but there's not that gripping character that you fall for.
I got you.
But, I mean, I guess you could say that for a lot of these guys. This pitcher for Arkansas, his parents cracked me up, man. They kept showing them all night last night and him hanging on. But when they stormed him and tried to interview him, and he just said, I shouldn't have hit that one batter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He had a perfect game going. And he
right,
clunked that
right,
batter right in his
right,
foot.
Yeah. And then the batter's leaned in too much.
Well, when you're not getting hits, you might as well try to lean in a little
absolutely.
Bit.
I get
you know
it.
What I mean?
Gotta
that's his baseball.
I'm not saying it was a bad call. I'm just saying.
Oh, you're talking the one at the end.
Yeah.
No, this one happened in like the fourth or fifth inning where he hit a guy on his back foot.
I was talking about the end.
Yeah, the one on the end. They overturned that one, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah. But Murray State gave it hell, man. There's just not a lot you can do when you're facing a kid that's doing a Randy Johnson impersonation.
No.
I mean, it was – That was
it really is incredible for a guy at that level when you know there's all these guys that can hit as well as these guys that make it this far with those damn metal bats.
Mm-hmm.
To throw a no-hitter is crazy.
The metal bats, I think all you're really getting is a little bit of higher exit velocity from it. So it can make some of these plays in the infield a little tougher to make, you know, because
I think the ball gets out there quicker and – some of these, you know, like warning track flies with the wood bat end up hitting the wall. And I don't know. I mean, maybe it happens more than I think, but it just seems like it's – well, didn't they say it was the first time in like 60-some years that it's happened at the World Series?
Yeah, I believe so. So that's
– I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Although I guess it's there's not a lot of no-hitters thrown in the – Major League World Series either. When was the last one of those?
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, that happened fairly recently, didn't it?
What's that?
In the World Series?
I was already looking that.
I know what
no hitter.
I know what's his name? Halliday threw one.
Yeah, 2022 World Series. Houston Astros pitching staff. It wasn't
it was the staff.
Okay.
It was a gang or
like
team no-hitter.
Like
Cheaters.
Yeah. And it was 2022. So that was, there was no cheating going. That was Dusty Baker's first real world series.
Oh, yeah. And I was happy with that one.
Yeah. 2017, I wanted no part of it. You know what I mean? But,
it's going to be fun. Let's go Cards.
Yeah. Like I said, by the time this one goes out, or this podcast airs, we're either still going to be in it or we're done. So just turn me off.
Eddie King Jr.
And do we feel, Tuna, do you feel like that LSU is, I mean, they're the ones that haven't lost yet. Do you feel like they're the team to beat?
I picked Arkansas going into this, and I'm going to stick with them. I think that I'm sorry to all the LSU guys. I'm pulling for y'all, but you got enough of them. I think Arkansas, they kind of, like I said, they've been there for so long or so many times up there, and they have yet to get it done. It's probably one time I'll really pull for an SEC team to get it done.
I think we're kind of pulling for LSU and Arkansas a little bit, other than the Cards.
And then the Chanticleers. Like,
and they're an easy team to pull for. Like, for sure.
Yeah, I don't dislike. Honestly, if Arkansas gets in there, there's not – I don't want UCLA to even sniff it. I want –
You just hate the Big Ten. I mean, that's obvious. The stalwarts of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
You just can't stand it.
Yeah, the Big Ten brass is sitting back like, this is why we took them, boys. Why we took them.
Do you even think the Big Ten commissioner knows they're playing in this tournament right now?
He has no idea. No, he has no idea. Tony P. Titty is on a yacht somewhere in a great lake.
He's back in a yacht thinking about the 4-2-2-2-2.
Indeed.
He's like, I wonder what kind of running backs Minnesota's going to have this year.
Right. SEC's going 5-10. Are we going 4-2-2-2?
Yeah, but speaking of them, UCLA being in the Big Ten, that's something we're going to touch on next week, is like the travel that some of these teams are going to face going out there now.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, they're the one team, but you get down to these four with I'm gonna go on and say it and move Arkansas on, where you got Arkansas, LSU, Coastal Carolina, and Louisville. That is, any team could win, and I'm good with it. You know,
awesome.
Like, I'm all for
it. Well, who else win the Shotskis? Who's winning the Shotskis?
Oh, dude, it's not even close. It's
is Louisville taking control?
Louisville has it. Louisville got, after that
Julie
day
and
one,
them are there.
Well,
daggone,
I think they blew their wad on that first day. Louisville is trailing big time in that. But LSU
Who's
comes
winning?
In and laps everybody.
LSU laps.
Yeah, LSU.
Right.
The Myrtle Beach boys came in and they really – let me try to find this
yeah,
here.
Yeah, LSU, man. Like, dude, they wear them pimp suits.
they got the dude that owns Kane's Chicken who just, like, he'll call in and be like, give me $10,000 worth of Jell-O shots. It's kind of taking the fun out of it. Here, I'm going to read the numbers to you. Okay, it's a little closer here. No, it's not. Never mind. I thought there was an extra digit there. LSU is at 19,599.
Oh, God.
The closest one to them was Murray State at 7,500.
Nice. Okay.
Well, I think Murray State became the everybody out there became fans for them.
Right.
Here's what I said.
I got an 800 seat stadium.
I was telling Colin the other day. I said, because we had even discussed on this podcast, if you ended up going, that we'd give you $50 to put down for Murray State. I said, I think all the people out there that don't have a team that are there, go in there and say, put this on Murray State, because they became like the
kind of the plucky
underdog or whatever.
Yes.
And that's how they were able to get this. Clearly, they didn't have enough people out there. I mean, unless they have.
There was a lot of people there yesterday. When you watched that game yesterday, like, there was a lot of Murray State fans. They had a big group of people.
And I suppose it's possible that every single person went and ordered 10 Jello shots or whatever.
Oh, no. That, every, all the locals that just go and hang out, like they were all pulling
from
out of state.
They canceled their Gulf Shores trip and said, let's go out to Omaha.
So Louisville has, as of now, 1,559.
Oh,
and this is probably one of the most pathetic performances
Boy,
I've
that
ever
is,
seen.
That is
to still, hopefully, not to still be there. No.
Hopefully tonight the guy, the Card fans will go down there and at least – try to put a dent in that.
I think we spend our money on bourbon and Miller Lights. I don't think we got time to mess with no Jello shots,
ain't
boys.
Ain't no time for no Jello.
Yeah, ain't dealing with none of that.
That's probably very true.
Yeah, our money goes to NIL.
Right.
We'll buy Jello.
Fred?
No, nothing.
Oh, you wanted to get into the soccer?
I wanted to mention, not around the horn. I wanted to get y'all's opinions on something here.
Yeah.
When we hit on a new subject.
No, we're ready. Let's jump right into it. Let me preface this by saying you had a lot of things to say on your call-in show about the U.S. men's national team, and I completely agreed with everything that you said.
Yeah.
Well, now the Gold Cup.
And I don't know. Tuna kept hitting he was cutting me off a lot on
was
that.
I?
Yeah, you were clicking me. No, I'm kidding.
I was.
But I couldn't tell if I mentioned that I was watching the USA Sweden match
not.
Remember when I kept cutting out?
Oh,
I kept cutting. Tuna's over there got me on the clicker going click, 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 click.
Well, man, you were just pacing like every room in your hotel
I kicked them all out down there on the beach, and I was on the balcony.
So now the Gold Cup started.
The infamous Gold Cup that no one cares about, including the players that are playing in it. What I wanted to get into with you all is the other tournament, but the Gold Cup tournament is going on. It's kind of, it is a tournament the United States should do well in, even though they don't have all their players. We've already talked about some of the guys that are out. There's a couple guys that are taking time off to rest, like Pulisic, and then McKinney, and a lot of the other players have decided Robinson's hurt, so is Dest, but McKinney and them have decided that they're playing in the FIFA Club Gold Cup. And Tuna, you asked me a question today, this morning or yesterday or whatever, are other players, which is a great question, everyone's giving the USA a bunch of shit because some of their players are sitting out. The reason that USA's getting shit is because their World Cup is here next year, which is like, I don't think America understands how big having a World Cup in your country is. But I have seen teams of like Qatar. Is that how you say that?
Nope.
Qatar. Is that Cotter?
Qatar. Well,
Cutter.
Some people, I never understood the Cutter word, but a lot of people do call it that. Qatar.
Qatar.
Is what I call it, not Qatar.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Qatar never even had a soccer team in their lifetime, and they put together a team, and I know that you automatically qualify if it's in your home country. They put a team together that actually was respected by many, even though they lost and did not make it through. That I'm talking, normally if you're like Sweden or if you're any other team that is a lower tier, but a team that is used to at least being in the World Cup, you will have a team that has been pushed up that can make the Elite Eight. Normally, that's how important and how many other countries push to make. I even remember when the USA team with Miola and them, they really went ape shit to get this team together, and they overachieved and did great things, and it changed soccer in this country forever. And this team is, and then you have people like Christian Pulisic, who's not even playing in the Gold Cup for his team. He's just sitting there resting. At least play something. I mean, I don't get it. Like, there's time to rest your body when you retire, bro. Like, but what I don't understand is the Gold Cup is, it's kind of uneventful. The teams you have in there, Jamaica, you've got Trinidad and Tobago. The USA just beat them 5-0. Don't let that fool you. Trinidad and Tobago could be probably the 200th team in the country, in the world. Mighty they Ducks are not them. Good.
Yeah,
they are horrible.
No,
so don't you let that score fool you.
Anything out of that.
But yesterday, Jamaica gets beat by Guatemala, who is an up and coming team with a new coach that's one of those motivators and rah rah. Well, and Reggae Boys looked horrible. They did not do. So you've got Costa Rica, Canada. So Canada does not have their two best players. They're playing in the World Cup club, and they also have an injury. So USA really should win this Gold Cup. I think it's going to be come down to maybe them in Panama or possibly Costa Rica. Saudi Arabia, who they have on Thursday night, watch that game, folks, if you can, because Saudi Arabia is a team that did really well.
How are they in the Gold Cup?
Well, the Gold Cup is just a tournament that is all the Americas. But isn't this like regional?
Yeah, all the Americas. It's just Saudi Arabia, I guess. Why?
I don't. Now, geography is not one of my best, Tuna, but. Well,
Saudi Arabia clearly is not in the.
But they are in it.
Are they in.
Yeah, they are in it.
They're in the Middle East. I mean, they're right next to Iraq.
Saudi Arabia's in it. Ghana is.
It's not like.
I think
it's not like an island or a Central American team.
No, you're right.
I mean, this is.
But they.
there's no geographical relevance to anyone else in the Gold Cup.
They've got. Who else? Yeah, they've got. Reggae Boys. Anyways,
Jamaica, Dominican Republic,
a lot of people, yeah, a lot of people are not really. Cuba doesn't even have a team. It really comes down to the USA has to fare well in this Gold Cup. It's really them against themselves.
Saudi Arabia is in Group D.
That's what I'm saying. But like, why?
I don't. Maybe they gave them a pass or something.
Well, they were in this last time because I remember you. Your last time. You were trying to get me into soccer, and you were hyping the Gold Cup like it was the biggest thing ever.
Right.
And now,
wait,
are
you sure that wasn't the CONCACAF?
No,
I enjoyed
the CONCACAF because that had more South American
teams. Oh, hell yeah.
And that was more fun. But this
That's
was
way bigger.
Yeah, this was.
But the Gold Cup is what got you. Mexico's in it. Mexico's
that's what you were trying
it,
to get me
right.
excited about soccer.
Right.
I think you were just looking for somebody to hang out with on a Wednesday night.
No, I just wanted you to watch that documentary, damn it. Mexico and USA. And you know what? I really think that it may come down to that. I have a feeling it's going to come down to Costa Rica and Mexico. Panama usually has our number. They seem to be trending up. But what I wanted to get in and ask you all questions is, do you know, because I really didn't. And was not aware of this other tournament going on.
The Club World Cup, right?
The Club World
Cup. This is, I guess, the first year for it, I guess?
I believe
and
so.
And they're trying to get, this is supposed to be a precursor to get Americans
it,
excited for the World
up.
Cup. And I think you're having some MLS teams go out and play against some of these other teams. I don't know, man. It is what it is.
No, I
think they're having a hard time selling tickets, believe it or not.
Well, dude, you are exactly right about that. All right, I want to tell you what this is in a nutshell on here. What is, because I find it interesting. The FIFA World Cup is an international football tournament, soccer, contested by the champion clubs from each of the six continental confederations. It's organized by FIFA. It takes place in the United States. There's 32 teams, and it is every club team that has divided into eight groups, but every club team that has won their club tournament. So you may have the Seattle Sounders playing Manchester City. You may have Miami and they made it. Miami, Seattle, and L.A. all made it from the Americas, if you will. And they are going to be going against some of the, like, you've got some of these teams from Brazil, Germany, some of these clubs from Mexico. And it is, as I've looked at it a little bit further, there, unfortunately, it's in the United States right before the World Cup. I don't know who planned that.
Well, I think this is supposed to be like a logistical practice round.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
You know, to get the parking, the ticket sales, the, you know, everything.
Well, they're not doing it. No one's taking.
Nobody's going.
Well, the mere fact that, but I do think.
Which is crazy, because
but here's the crazy thing: there are great players playing in this tournament.
Watch PSG play or something,
dude. All the greats are playing in this tournament. They want to win the global club tournament, and that's what I was getting at. In the end of the day, at the end of this blah 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 of us figuring it out, I want people to know that all the greats are playing on these teams that are on those clubs. Mm-hmm. And if you want to watch something, yes, watch the United States and the world and the Gold Cup, okay. But really, you should be watching the FIFA club. It's on Fox. I think the games are on Fox, too. The only game that's happened, there was a game today, but Chelsea beat one of our American teams pretty handily.
Shocker.
Exactly.
They beat L.A.
But I'm saying, I'm just telling everyone that we should really, I want us to pick a team.
No.
Yes.
No, you guys do it. I'm not.
You're not going to pick a team.
I think this tournament's stupid, so I'm
not. Not the Gold Cup.
Yeah. Is Peru in it?
Possibly. There is a team from the Peruvian.
Is there?
No.
Oh.
But there's like Los Flamingos. From Brazil.
As I look
at... I mean, PSG's going to win it.
Okay.
You win the Champions League, you're going to come over here and kick everybody's
ass
here.
I would think so.
Yeah.
As I look at it, LAFC and Seattle have both already lost.
Yeah.
Right.
So...
Inter Miami.
Does that mean you're out? Is it a one-time...
Inter Miami tied with Al Ahly, 0-0. So that now, Bayern beat Auckland City 10-0. PSG beat Atletico Madrid 4-0. Botafogo beat Seattle.
Botafogo, that's my team.
I'm taking Chelsea.
I'm taking Botafogo.
Well,
I love it.
I had your team.
Dortmund's not in it, or I'd be.
No, I've
they
got.
They are in it.
Yes,
Dortmund's
they are.
Not.
No.
Yeah, they are. They
are
play
they?
Porto.
Fluminense.
I've got Tuna's team.
Well, I'm a Dortmund guy, so
Fluminense.
I'm definitely
you were
Dortmund.
Boca Juniors.
I didn't think they were in it.
Fluminense. They play Fluminense.
Fluminense.
Oh,
that's like
they actually
Brazil.
Tied. They already tied 0-0 today. Dortmund and Fluminense tied 0-0 today.
Okay. Real Madrid's in it. Manchester City.
Botafogo plays PSG next.
Tuna, what about the
Botafogo
Boca Juniors?
Screwed.
Boca Juniors.
Botafogo has a junior team?
Yeah, the Boca Juniors are a possible team. I'm going
they're
with,
in it too?
I'm going with FC Porto. I'm going with FC Porto.
Well, I'm definitely going Dortmund now that I know they're in it.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I didn't see Dortmund in this, but okay.
They are.
Bruce Dortmund.
What about the Urawa Red Diamonds? I love that team.
How about the Mamelodi Sundowns?
Yes, like Liverpool, Manchester U did not qualify. Barcelona didn't. Club Lyon didn't. Some of these great teams didn't. So anyways, enough about soccer, but I wanted to let everyone know that this is a cool tournament and you should watch it because some of the greatest players on these club teams are playing, and some of the young, like the next Lamine Yamal is playing on some of these younger teams that is going to end up getting paid $200 million to move up to one of the big dogs.
At the end of the day, what we have is an opportunity to have a bunch of soccer on TV.
That's right.
In the middle of the day.
Yes.
When nothing else is going on. If you happen to be around the TV, you should get on there and flip it on because there's going to be some really good games.
Yes.
The thing that makes soccer to me is the fans. And when you're watching them, like those big European games, watching the fans get into it, like, I don't know. Wish that we could get a fill up like that.
You're probably you will on the World Cup, but you're probably not going to on this. And as we saw from the
sad if I turn on an MLS game like in Austin's playing somebody and there's like a half full stadium.
Well,
a lot of these stadiums do fill out.
A lot of the MLS has really good.
They do, but I've seen some where it's pretty thin.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's a trial run, so we'll see how it goes. But I'm going to try to think maybe it's like a COVID year and just watch them.
There you go. Put some cardboard fans up. Like get the ones you made for the COVID year for baseball and put them out there in the seats for these stadiums.
I wonder what they're doing with the have you ever driven past the racetrack in Sparta?
Yeah,
full of Ford trucks. Oh yeah,
well,
and seats look like people.
They had painted the people to put them up in the top levels of the grandstand, so on television it looked like there was 300,000 people there. Or whatever. I wonder what they've ever done with those. Maybe they could ship those out the Rose Bowl or something.
Well, anyways, I just want to throw a little soccer pizzazz in there for our people in where?
Leeds. Very quickly, because we are kind of up against the time clock, I'm watching here the Stanley Cup. It appears to me that Florida is well on their way. They're up 2-0. Appears to me they're well on their way to another Stanley Cup championship.
Oh, no, Connor McDavid.
Freddie called that hard one.
Yes. anybody have anything to add to the Stanley Cup? I was hoping... And I mean, I'm still hoping that we can get a game 7. It doesn't look likely, but
Marchand, MVP.
Yeah, you just know. Bet him to score a goal every night, and you're going to come out on top.
Right.
So
he's an ugly little dude.
Yeah, well, you ain't got to be pretty to play hockey, buddy.
No, you don't.
It is not a prerequisite.
That is very obvious.
Ain't got to wear a helmet, ain't got to wear a mouthpiece, or ain't got to wear a shield. Got to wear a helmet.
So, we had a pretty packed show tonight, a lot of stuff to get to. We are finally back down in the downstairs pub, in our rightful space, in the space that we very much enjoy bringing this program to you. And as such, it's time for Last Call, and I'm going to start tonight with Fred.
Oh, I hope I don't steal your thunder, Tuna.
They ain't taking mine, baby boy.
let's start with something's getting ready to happen here in the River City. And the next, I can't remember what the date is, but they've already got it set.
They finally going to open our cookout
burger
up?
I don't think that's ever happening.
It might be something coming in. I'm not sure when they set the date. I'm sure it's, I don't know. But they're naming a street here in Louisville, Kentucky. Here in downtown Louisville for their a past AD, Tommy, a.k.a. Tommy Turtleneck, Jurich. And Tommy has done many things for the Ville. Trust me, the coach coaching the baseball team right now was hired by Tommy T.
The baseball stadium that they're playing in was built because of Tom Jurich.
Right.
When he got here, we were still playing in old Cardinal Stadium.
Yeah. But a road, that's all he's getting is a road, like a street name. I mean, it's something, man.
Like, what do you want to do? Something. Like, put his face in the middle of the football field?
No.
I think you got to respect everything that he's done here. Louisville would not be the athletic program it is today without him. And without his foresight and his shrewd business nature, whether you like it or love it, He got things done.
True. And
the way his tenure ended, I mean, it's... I mean,
well,
it's,
there is the rest of the story, like Pete Rose, OJ, and Barry Bonds.
It's a pretty big move, I think, for both of them to be at a place where this can happen. Because he certainly deserves... Just from, I mean.
But did you think that he left bitterly? I'm sure he did.
Of
and
course
I guess,
he did.
So I guess
the thing,
they've cleaned
I don't
that
think
up.
He has any problems with the University of Louisville. I think he loves this place and he loves that university. I think he has problems with certain people.
The president
that were there at the university.
And those people
and you don't
are
hold that.
Gone.
Yeah. So you don't hold that against, like, there's his life's work is put in there. Like, for him to see that and be like, this is basically because of me.
Yeah.
I don't like he has to be proud of everything that Louisville accomplishes. Like, I don't think he's sitting there pulling against us because he doesn't like how it ended.
Right. No,
you know what
well,
I mean?
They said there was a settlement that cleared him of any wrongdoing, but he is coming and he is going to get, I don't know if that's during a football game or what, but he is coming to get a street named after him, which I was, you know. I want to be in that Corvette convertible, baby. You know what I'm saying? Mm. He's coming to town. Tommy T. Also.
Always like Tom Jarrett.
Oh, yeah. Guys, I want with a heartfelt back to football. The Bama Nation lost one of its greatest fans. Sunday night, a fine bomb caller that Bama Nation and I and everybody love so dearly. That would be Larry from Shelby. That's what he was known for, from Shelby, Alabama. He hung out on his houseboat, or I think he had a houseboat that he hung out on. He drank Bud Light, 25 a game every Saturday night, is what he would say. And I just want to say, Larry, we're going to get you a championship, Jack. I wanted to say that for old Larry. So rest in peace, Larry from Shelby.
He was one of the OGs from Paul Feinbaum.
From Paul Feinbaum.
One of the original guys.
Had a great heart, ex-police officer, or maybe it was a state trooper, a police officer. I remember one of the callers said, "Could you imagine Larry from Shelby coming up and pulling you over?" It had to be something funny coming out of his mouth.
Better not be wearing an Auburn hat.
I was
going
to say, an Auburn fan.
Don't be wearing no Auburn,
Jack. That's why you don't
get
those team license plates put on your car.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right. That's right. But rest in peace, Larry from Shelby. You will be greatly missed by Freddie Benders. I can assure you that. That's it.
All right. Tuna.
All right. I got two quick things. Shohei Ohtani is back on the mound. He went to the Dodger organization and said, "Look, I'm done with these simulated games. Let me pitch in a real game." So the Dodgers said, "Well, you can do whatever the hell you want, buddy." So they sent him out there, and he pitched one inning of unimpressive baseball. But I think the biggest takeaway from this
I thought it was impressive, was it not?
No. His velocity was very impressive. The fact he hit 100 miles an hour, was throwing 98, 99. That's good. He's got to get his location back down, so that's going to come. But that's a good sign, seeing how our entire pitching staff is on the schneid right now. Everybody's recovering. So we kind of need that. There's a tight little battle right there. In the NL West that's a tough division. You got the Giants, who just got Rafael Devers in a trade.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
The Padres and the Diamondbacks are still a spicy team. But
spicy.
Yeah, and the next thing, not sports related. I was talking to Travis about this earlier. Waylon Jennings' son, Shooter Jennings, he found, going through a bunch of old stuff, a ton of unreleased music that Waylon Jennings has recorded. And it's enough that they are putting together three albums.
Wow.
To be released over time. The first one, it's going to be titled Songbird, will be releasing in September, I believe. So
cool.
Something to look forward to. I'm a Waylon fan as much as any person in the world. And just I'm going to be able to hear some unreleased music from him, is that's a big deal.
Yeah, man. I had not heard anything about that, and that made me so happy to hear that. Like, you wouldn't, I mean, golly, Waylon's been dead for what, 23
years? 2002.
Yeah.
So 23 years, yeah.
And so that's very exciting, and I can't wait to see how that all plays out. Guys, it was great to have you both back here in studio tonight. Great to be back in the downstairs pub. Want to thank everybody for listening. Reminder, if you enjoy the show, please let a friend know and let them know that you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. With all that being said, for the big fella, the Tuna Country, Matt Kemp, and the fabulous one, Freddie Benders, this is Travis Carter saying, go Pacers, go Cards, and so long, everybody.